All right, Shabbos, good morning, good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's share. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Iyar, Haba Alinu Latova, Menachem and Susie Schoenfeld for dedicating all the Shemun Joshua's this month as a schuss for a Fushli Mefor. Hershey Sub and Peshi Antarezel, Tzvi Meir Halivi Ben Sarlea, Yochever Bas Sarieta, Froma Elga Bas Fega, Meir Avram Ben Fega, Zachari Dome, Peral Shir, Yisrael Ben Chaya, Yochever Rivka Bas Chaya, Shimon Rafal Ben Atari Akira, and Kol Chole Yisrael, as well as Falia for the Nesham of Esther and Brown Adler, Zichron of the Vracha. Yona and Shashi Ehrenfeld for dedicating Ovi Shimon Joshua's this month, loving memory of the Zechon Nishmas, their grandfather, Yosef Ben Shmuel Aaron, Zichron of the Vracha. Our week of learning sponsors, Nathan and Beth Adler, in memory of Beth's sister, Avigail Bas Tzvi, Zichrona Livracha, our Day of Learning sponsor, Hilary Jacobs in Kent, in commission of the yard site of her daughter, Shifra Zichrona Livracha Bas Chana Dina. And our Dafyomi sponsors for today, Ayal and Sarah Steinberg, in the schuss of continued health for Shalom Chana Bas Susha, and the ultimate refuah shlim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos Havan Aliyah, their families, Yenachama, all those who need a refuah shlim, together with Kol Choli Yisrael, Kodesh Baruch Hu should continue to look after our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, and our holy soldiers should be successful b'chol ma'aseh yedeihem. But with that, let us begin. We have an incredible daf. Really, it's always an incredible daf. An incredible daf today. Today's daf is Yud Gimel 13. We are picking up on Yud Beis Amud Beis 12b. 12b at the two dots. Amr Abchia Bar Abba. By Rabbi Yochanan. Shabbos says, so 12b, 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom, 2 dots. Amr Abchia Bar Abba, by Rabbi Yochanan. Katan, yesh la machshava o eima machshava. So we'll say a fascinating question over here. Does katan, right, does a minor have the ability to possess meaningful and significant machshava? Now, another word for machshava would be kavana. Kavana. Can a katan have a halachically meaningful sense of intent or not? Take a quick look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi's in the wide lines, second line in. Katan, yesh la machshava, eima machshava, keep going. B'shchitas kachim, debaye kavana, k'diafinu b'shmayim, t'kamayis edizvachim, v'shachat katan olo l'shma, mi havia kavana olo. So Rashi says, I'll give you just a simple example of this. Kavanas need to be shared with us. Remember again, what we established yesterday, right, is that shchita, one thing we do have to do is we need a lot of catch-up in Hilcho Shchita, which actually is very exciting because now, since we're back, kind of like transferring a little bit out of kachim, Into halacha, we can learn Hilchos Shechita. Hilchos Shechita is the beginning of Yardeya, Simon Aleph in Yardeya. So I do want to allocate some amount of time to just a little bit of catch-up, just to open up the Shulchan Aruch, go through it, see all of the halachos, which are mamash halacha l'maisa. But again, at least from the conclusion of the Gemara yesterday, it came out that Shechita, regular Shechita, just a regular animal, does not require Kavana. Right? Not require Kavana at all. Shechita of Kavanos absolutely, unequivocally, does require Kavanos. But remember again, this is opening Mishnah in Meseches Zvachim. Meseches Zvachim. Right? Remember again, what's the halacha? If you go in and you check the Karban Shalal Lishma, what's the halacha? It works, except doesn't count towards the owner's obligation. Exception to that rule? Chatos. Excellent, right? So again, so we know, and Karban Pesach. So we know that halacha lamaisa, Karban. So now, here's the Shaila. What happens if a katan expresses kavana? He says, okay, I'm shechting this. So again, remember, technically speaking, a katan can shecht as long as there's oversight and he knows what he's doing. That was a previous Mishnah. So halacha lemaisa, he's shechting and he says, I have in mind, and remember again, we'll say, just put a lot of things together. Number one, shechita doesn't require, number one, a katan could do shechita with proper oversight, at least according to our maskana over here, right? Number two, halacha lemaisa, Karbanos do require kavana. So can a katan express kavana, and is that kavana halachically significant? So a katan goes ahead and says, I'm shechting this karban for the sake of an ola. Does that work or not? Says the Gemara. Amrle Rabbi Ami, v'tibayle maisa. Why are you just asking about machshava? Why don't you also go ahead and ask, does a katan have a meaningful action? On the actions, in other words, you're jumping right to intent, right? Could a katan have kavana? Could he have meaningful intent? What about asking, is a katan's actions halachically recognized or not? So the Gemara says, why didn't you ask about a katan's actions? Very simple. The Gemara says, Because again, Rabbah says, we're going to see in just a moment, we learn in the Mishnah that in fact a katan can create halachically meaningful actions. Machshava nami lo tibayilei, the same way you don't have to ask about machshava, why? Disnan inlan machshava. Because you have a Mishnah that explicitly says the kavana of a katan is halachically insignificant. Okay, what are these Mishnayos that we're quoting over here? So here we go. Says the Gemara, this nan. This is actually a very interesting case. Ha'alon v'harimon v'egos. So alon is a gallnut, rimon is a pomegranate, egos is a nut. In all of these cases, shechakakum tinogos lamod bohen afar oshes kin lekaf maznayim. So what happens? A child took these items, hollowed it out. Now, why did he hollow it out? Either to use it as a measuring utensil, or to use it as one of the sides of a scale. In other words, so what has he done effectively? He's transformed this item into a kli. Now, again, I'll say generally, when you transform an item into a kli, and the kli has a base kibul, it has a receptacle, now what's its status? It's mekabel tuma. It's mekabel tuma. So a katan obviously is acting with intentionality to go ahead and create this utensil. What's its status? What's talocha? Tmein mibnei shiyesh lahen maisa. So talocha la maisa, actually, the kli. Well, when we say tmein means it's makabal tumah. Why is it makabal tumah? Because the actions of a katan are halachically recognized. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Last Rashi on your base, my base. Sheyesh lahen maisa. Kigon zu shemasein mochichin to l'shem kli niskavnu. V'gam heim omrim kein, v'yish kan maisu machshava hamoridim osel toras kli. So Rabbah says, so this is very interesting. So the way Rashi understands this case is that what's happening over here is there's maisa and machshava. Maisa and machshava. In other words, what does it mean, maisa and machshava? That on one hand, the katan is hollowing out this kli, and he's saying, I'm doing this in order to make it a kli. If you have that duality, so the Gemara suggests over here that halacha l'maaseh, that makes the kli into a valid kli, and therefore it is makabel tuma. Okay, so the Gemara said, "Sheyesh lahen maisa," because a katan has maisa. Now again, the way Rashi is understanding this phrase is, "Yesh lahen maisa" means when a katan does a meaningful act accompanied by the expression of intent, ultimately that is halachically recognized. Okay, top of Yud Gimel, "Ve'en lahen machshava." But halacha l'maisa, their intent by itself, without a concrete act, is not meaningful. Take a look at the top Rashi. Ve'ilen machshava kigon matzal l'klipas egos kimoshehi v'chashava le'alamod afilu madad ba elashalo asa maisa l'shem kli. So for example, we'll say same case. Let's say the katan were to go ahead and find a hollowed out golnut, and he were to take it and start measuring it, or he were to take it and attach it to a scale. So in this case, again, if you were to look at what he's doing, it's clear what he's doing, but he himself has not done a maisa, right, to fashion the kli, nor has there been any expression of intent. So when he does that, so I just want to contrast this, that's different than an adult, right? If I were to go ahead and take a hollowed out golnut and start using it clearly as a measuring cup, then I'll say it's makabel tumah, because as an adult, it is clear from my actions what my actions and what my intent is. By a katan, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is like this. When there is intent, right, expressed intent, followed by concrete action, that can be halachically recognized. But when you have either one or the other, that is not going to work by itself. So the Gemara says, Amar Leh, top of Yud Gimel, 13a, Amar Leh, Machshava Gridas Alal Kami Baileh. The truth is, I'm not asking just about Machshava by itself. In other words, we'll say, as we just said, Machshava, ultimately, again, without intent, I'm not asking about that. I understand. Excuse me. Machshava without action, that I know clearly is not halachically meaningful. Ki kami baile, machshavto nikeres mitoch myself. I'm asking about the following case. What happens when his intent is clearly understandable through his actions? For example, I will say, kigon, tahava kaima ola bedaram ba'asua b'tsafon b'shachta. Watch this. Let's say, remembering, I will say, the halacha is an ola has to be shechted in the north, right? The northern part of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say a katan is standing with his ola in the south, and he intentionally moves the ola over to the north and shechts it there. So Rabbah says, so here, you have a maisa. Now in this case over here, there's not an explicitly articulated intent. Because remember, as we just established, if a katan expressly articulates intent, followed by concrete action, that could be halachically meaningful. We could work with that. What we're asking over here is, There's no intent that is expressed, no intent that is articulated. But there clearly is a concrete action, and from the action it looks clear what the intent is. So remember, for an adult, that works just fine. For an adult, right? If I was standing with my Ola in the south and then walked it over to the north and checked in it there, even though I didn't say a thing, it's clear what I'm doing and my actions are concrete and valid. What if a katan did this? Can we say that his intent can be gleaned from his actions, and perhaps now this is a halachically meaningful act? So the Gemara says, "May." First, look at Rashi. Machshavta nekeres hatoch ma'asav. First short line in Rashi. Lefi ra'o seinenu. So in other words, what we see is we see what he's doing. Aval in anu yodinim asam ma'asav zeleshe machshavta zu. So we see what he's doing, and we think we know what his intent is, but there is no expressed intent, so is that good enough for us to work with? So Gemara says, "May midaisi b'tzafon v'shachtei chavelei." Do we say, look, the fact that he walked the carbon over from the south to the north indicates to us that he knows what he's doing. He's purposely moving the carbon to a new location, and therefore the shechita is good. There's not enough room in the south. That's why he's walking it over to the north. Or he doesn't feel as comfortable in the south, so he's moving it over to the north. But lav dafka, that there's any specific intent over here. Incredible. So the Gemara says, so that's our question. So let's just frame what we have. Katan's machshava by itself, halachically meaningless. His action, when accompanied by an explicitly articulated intent, could be good. Our question is action, which seems to clearly highlight an intent, but the intent was never articulated. Does that work? Classic case, Katan is standing with his carbon, his Ola in the south. He walks it over to the north. And Ola is supposed to be shechted in the north. He never said to us, I'm walking it over to the north because that's where an Ola needs to be shechted. But it seems pretty clear contextually that's what he's doing. So do we ascribe intent to his action or maybe not? Maybe he has no idea what he's doing. He just feels more comfortable in the north than he does in the south. That's why he's moving it over. That's our Shaila. To which the Gemara says, Hanami Amr Rabbi Yochanan Chadazimna. Rabbi Yochanan already spoke about this one time. This son of us is so interesting. Hamayla perosa legag meaknimo. Person took his fruit, took his produce from the ground, and he took it up to the roof. Why? Because of insects. That's what's happening over here. Here's the issue of insects. The yarat alein tal. And Rabbi Yochanan, remember again, produce halacha lemaisa only goes ahead and becomes receptive to tumah when it comes in contact with what are the seven liquids. We'll focus on water right now, including dew. So for example, if I leave my produce out and dew gets on my produce, if I am happy, right? Remember again, about this, another interesting halacha with tumah receptivity. Food only becomes receptive to tumah. Ultimately, again, if I want the moisture there. If I don't want the moisture there, it does not become receptive. So again, in the classic case, I leave my produce out, it gets wet with dew. I'm like, oh, so happy, it has some moisture on there. It's receptive to tumah. In this case over here, I moved my produce from the ground to the roof because of insects, okay? The yarad aleantal, and then the moisture got on it because it was on the rooftop. Einon v'chiyutan. Means that my produce is not receptive to tumah. Because again, I didn't have intention for it to get wet. Now again, if after the fact, right, this kavim bekach means that I wanted it to get wet with the dew, I'm happy that, and I will say, this could be proactively or retrospectively. Proactively, like, oh, I'm so excited for my produce to get wet with the dew tomorrow morning, or I wake up in the morning, I see that it's wet with dew, and I'm like, oh, that's great, I'm so happy that happened. So whether, again, it's prospectively or retrospectively, either way, the produce becomes receptive to tumah. Okay, helam. Now that's fine. So that's actually not the case we're focusing on for ourselves. Helam cherishot to the cotton. What happens if the cherishot to the cotton brings it up to the roof? Afa pishnis kavnu lekach enon b'chi yutan. Even if, right, if the cherishot to the cotton brings the produce up to the roof, and they explicitly say we're bringing it up to the roof, yes, because of the insects, but also because they wanted to get wet with dew, it does not become receptive to tumah. Why? Because halacha l'maisa, because a katan has maisa, but does not have machshava, right? So the Gemara says, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Einan b'chi yutan." Rashi, he says, "She'in machshavta machshava, v'hechsher b'machshava taloi, v'hay ma'isa da'aliya lav ma'isahu, de'mipnei aknima ha'alom." So Rabbi says, here's what's interesting about this case. Remember, an item only becomes receptive to tumah if there is intentionality, right? If the owner wants the moisture there. Because a katan does not possess machshava, therefore again, even if he wants the produce to become wet, it's not receptive to tumah. What about maisa? There's no maisa here either. Why is there no maisa here? Why? Because remember, why did you bring it up to the roof? Because of the insects. Nothing to do with moisture. So in this case over here, really, you have neither machshava nor maisa. Now watch this. Here's the qualification and here's the point we're looking for. Vam Rabbi Yochanan, lo shon ala shalo hipech b'hen. This is only true if halacha l'maisa, if the chere shot of a cotton didn't turn the produce over. Aval hipech b'hen, hari ze b'chiyuton. But if he turned the produce over, ultimately, it is receptive to tuma. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Ela shlo hipech b'hen la'achar sheyarad hatal alei mitzad zeh kedei sheyipol alei mitzad acher." Now, obviously, the act of turning over the produce, what does that do? What does that show? That shows the same way it got wet on side A, I want it to get wet on side B as well. Rashi goes, "Anaval hipech b'hen demaisav mochichin afa pishelo pirish machshavto hoil v'nikir shedaito lakach." Rabbi Yochanan says, however, if the Chere Shot of a cotton take the produce and turn it over, then halacha l'maisa is receptive to tuma. Why? Why, Rabbi Yochanan? Because what is that a case of? That is a case of where intention is clearly expressed through action. Right? The intention is not articulated because Rashi points out here again. If the katan comes up to the roof and the katan says, "Ah, the produce got wet. This is great. I want to go ahead and turn it over," because I want it to become receptive to tumah, then again, Rabbi says that's not a shayla, because that's a case of clearly articulated intent coupled with action. Rabbi Yochanan is adding on over here, if let's say again the katan didn't say anything, he just turned over the produce, it is clear from his actions that he wants the produce to become wet and receptive to tumah. So Rabbi said, this is our case. This is exactly our case. Our case is the case where halacha l'maisa, again, the katan didn't explicitly articulate intent, but what he did is, but through his actions, we see what his intention is. And it seems that that is a case that works. And that could create actual halachic results. Halachi kami wa'alei. The Gemara says, you're right. It works. So again, Rabbi says, so let's just frame what we have. Katan, right? Katan just has intentionality, not followed up by action, not going to work. Katan has action that is followed up, that is preceded by explicitly articulated intent, will work. Now it seems also that if Katan does an action, and it is clear through his actions what his machshava is, that should work as well. So the Gemara says, you're right, we know it works. What's our shaylach? Interesting. Our shaila is does this create realities daraisa or only realities derabanan? Look at Rashi. Hachi kami baile daraisa derabanan. Hadar mina v'shamati mirabosai demachshavto nikeres etoch ma'isav havi machshav kilu perish v'shas ma'isa daraisi hi v'samchim na la afila l'kula kigon bayon dela'el behavi olo bendarim etzafo machshri ol derabanan. Shabbos says, so here's the shaila. Does this concept work? Midaraisa. Now, midaraisa will be our case. The katan takes the carbon, takes the ola from the south to the north. He didn't say anything, but it seems to be clear through his actions what it is that he's doing. Is that enough to go ahead and make this a valid act? Midaraisa. Or do we just say that this is just true midrabanan? Midrabanan means they were just machmir this way. For example, in the case of the tumah. In the case of the tumah, if he went ahead and he turned over the produce, so we're going to say midrabanan, his actions are meaningful, because that creates a chumrah, because now the produce is susceptible to tumah. That's our shayla. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Masni Yochanan. Nachman bar Yitzchak had a different version of this. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba bar Rabbi Yochanan. Katan sheish lomais. Katan yeish lomaiso in lomaiso. Does a katan? So what says he just has the reverse version of this. Right beforehand we were starting with machshava. Now in the first version starting with machshava. Now starting with maisa. So in his version it's like this. Katan yeish lomaiso in lomaiso. Does a katan? Are his actions viewed as legally meaningful or not? Amar Rabbi Ami, Viti Bayli Machshava. Why are you asking about Maisa? Why don't you ask about his intentions? Does a katan create a halachically recognized intention or not? Kavano, Maishta Machshava de la Kami Bayle. Why did you not ask about Machshava? Very simply, this is not in the Machshava, because you have a Mishnah that supports this and says that a katan does not have legally recognized intent. Maisa nami loti bayle. So don't ask about Maisa either, because this nan yesh lahen Maisa. Because we learned before that a katan does have Maisa. That's a reference to the case of the fruit, of the produce. Hachi kami bayle. You're right. Here's our shayla. Daraisa al drabanan. Ultimately, I'm going to say, so let's go with what we know. So therefore, it seems to be that everyone, okay, alternate versions, but everyone is kind of coming to the same conclusion, which is, if a katan doesn't act, and from that action, it is clear to us what his intention is, that is halachically meaningful and recognizable. The shayla is it halachically meaningful and recognizable on a daraisa level? That even, let's say, in the carbon case, he moves it from the south to the north, we're going to say, oh, that's legitimate, or no. It's recognized, but only midirabanan, and really only when it creates a stringency, like in the case of the produce. The Gemara says, Upashit, and we answer, Yesh lahen maisa afila midaraisa. That ultimately, again, a katan has a maisa, a katan has a halachically recognized act, even midaraisa. Right? In other words, their actions are recognized even midaraisa. However, Ein lahen machshava va'afila midirabanan. But their machshava, again, Rabbi says, so the action of a katan will work even da'oraisa. We're going to have to see exactly what that means. But ultimately, again, their machshava is invalid, is not halachically recognized, even midrabanon. I machshavto nikeres mitoch maisov. So again, Rabbi says, midaraisa o enlo midrabanon yeshlo. What about that last case? That last case of where he does not explicitly articulate an intent, but his intent seems to be clear from his actions. Ultimately, again, midaraisa, it does not work. Midrabanan, it will work. So both sides. So there is a lot to talk about in these cases in general about the machshava of a katan. About the shal katan. So I just want to share with you just to point out, the Gemara essentially leaves off with three cases, right? Let's go with what seems to be clear. What seems to be clear is the intent of a katan. Right? When not followed up by any kind of action, right? Or not expressed in action, is halachically insignificant. Right? The action of a katan, right? When preceded by explicitly articulated intent, does seem to be valid, at least in some cases. The machlokes case is no explicitly articulated intent, but there seems to be an intent based on his actions. Does that work or not? The answer to that seems to be yes, but the machlokes really rests in when does it work. So this is a more involved discussion, which we don't have time for fully today, but I just want to share with you two facts that emerge from this. The Rambam in Psulei HaMukdashin writes the following, this is Perek Aleph Halacha Vav. HaKatan eino shochet kachim afapi shagadol omed al gabav. Shakachim tzrichim machshava v'katan ein lo machshava. So I will say, a katan cannot shecht karbanos. Can't shecht karbanos. Why? Because karbanos require kavana, and a katan is not capable of creating halachically recognized kavana intent. And this is true even if there is an adult overseeing his shechita. V'afilu haisa machshavto nikeres mitoch maisov, eina machshava lahakel ela lahachmir. And even if we see that he has specific kavanah, as evidenced by the actions he's engaging in. For example, right, he has an ola. His ola was in the south. He purposely takes the ola, moves it over to the north. It's clear that this kid knows what he's doing. Even with that, the Rambam says, a katan cannot shecht kachim because he does not have legally recognized kavana. Now the Rambam says, listen to this. He says, why? Because halacha lemaisa, we do recognize the kavanas of a katan, but when? Only to be machmir, never to be megal. What's a good example of recognizing the intention of a katan to be machmir? The produce case. But the produce case, yeah, when the katan flips over the produce, then Einachinayim are going to say, okay, we trust his kavana. When it comes to da'araisas, we do not trust his kavana as well. And Naram says, Ketzer ha'isa ola omedes bedarom, umashcha katan ve'vi'il etzafon, u'shachta shayimaisa v'nikar shahashat l'shidas kachim, hariz epsula. So, this is very important. Halacha l'maisa, the Rambam paskins, that the machshava of a katan is absolutely and totally meaningless when it comes to kavanos. Right? Even if there's an adult overseeing him, even if he explicitly articulates it, right? Even if it's clear from his actions, a katan cannot shecht kachim because his kavana capacity is not recognized legally when it comes to matters of daraisa. On the other hand, the Rambam does paskin in the case of Tumas Ochlin that we do trust the katan, right? That halacha lemaisa. So the Rambam does paskin halacha lemaisa that in this case, if the ketanim were to go ahead and turn over the produce, then einachinami, that would make it hochshu lekabel tuma. So we see that halacha lemaisa, a katan is considered to have tuma. Is considered to have machshava, intent, when it comes to drabbanan l'chumra, but not for daraisas, and therefore under no circumstances can a katan go ahead and ever shecht kachim, even if he's being overseen by an adult. Now again, full circle, this does leave the door open for what type of shechita by a katan? What does it leave the door open for? By chulin, right? Because by chulin, it sounds like right now, by chulin, what's the halacha? You do not require intent by shechita. Okay, I just need a proper action, which sounds like perhaps a katan could still be involved in a process like this. Like I said, we'll see the halacha l'maisa on that. Let's finish off. This is the follow-up discussion. How do I know? Misasek b'kachim means I am involved in sacrificial process without any kavana. Without any kavana. For example, I will say, right? For example, I go ahead and I'm lifting up a knife, right? To go, somebody asks me, what's the motion you have to make with a knife when you go ahead and mishech? I pick up the knife, I move it back and forth, and it happens to be that there's the neck of a sacrificial animal right there. I end up doing a perfect shechita. That's called misasek b'kachim. Misasek means I don't even have kavana for the act itself. I have kavana just to move a knife back and forth, and it turns out I'm very skilled. I created a totally proper shechita. So I will say, how do I know that halacha l'maisa that is possible? Shenemar v'shachat es ben abakar. The pasuk says you shall shecht the ben abakar. Shetei shechita l'shem ben bakar. That shechita ultimately has to be for the sake of this karbon. Amar lo zubi yadenu. I know that pasuk. What I'm asking for is, how do I know that even b'dieved, right, even ex post facto, even after the fact, if I did not have kavana, halacha lemaisa, my shechita of my carbon is not going to be good. To which the Gemara says, shenemar v'shachat as ben abakar. Sorry, amar b'dieved la'akim inay. Tavolomar l'irt sonchem tizbachu l'daitchem zivuchu. So both of the pasuk says l'irt sonchem zivuchu tizbachu. Literally, in accordance with your will, you shall offer it. The Gemara understands, what does it mean l'irt sonchem l'daitchem l'daschem? You have to do it with das. Karbanos have to be offered with das. So Moshe said, by the way, and this is halacha l'maisa, as we just saw. Karbanos, again, opening Mishnah in Meseches Zvachim, we know this. Karbanos require kavana, even at Shechita, right? Every step ultimately, again, requires kavana. Which Moshe says, a tremendous Musar Haskel as well. If you listen to this wording of the Gemara, minayin l'misasek b'kachin shupasal. How do we know that if you're not paying attention in matters of Kedusha, your actions are not going to yield the desired results? I will say, if there is one thing that is required in the quest for holiness, it is intentionality. In fact, sometimes our greatest problem and why we don't experience the growth, right? The most, like we always speak about, you ever wonder, it's almost Elul, it's almost Yom Noraim. And right, remember, we always say there's good news and bad news. What's the good news? The good news is most of us, when we come to Yom Noraim, there's not a lot of new averus. Right, that's, I think for most of us, that's the really good news. It's not like, oh, I dabbled in a whole bunch of new crazy stuff this year, right? That generally doesn't happen. But what does happen? It's the same stuff, year after year after year. The same struggles, the same averas, the same nisyonos. And a lot of times, when you come to Yom Noraim, it's an incredibly frustrating experience, right? Because, like, when am I going to get it together? When am I finally going to make those changes? So why is that we struggle with the same things year in, year out? So remember, we learned Bilvavi. It's possible because the things that we struggle with are things we didn't get right in a past life. And so we're here to just struggle with it until we get it right, until we correct it. But it's also possible because we do not create for ourselves comprehensive spiritual plans. We do a lot of good things, right? I'm davening, I'm learning, I'm doing good things. But Abbas, if somebody were to ask you, what is your comprehensive spiritual plan? Where are you now? Where do you want to get to? And what's the process for getting from point A to point B? I would venture to say most of us don't have a comprehensive spiritual plan. I think what we have is we have goals like, I'm learning the daf, I have a chavrusa, I come to learn the base medrash at night, I'm doing nachyomi, I'm doing smicha, whatever, I'm learning how, whatever the things we do, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking what you do. I'm asking like what your plan is. It's the same way, think about it in your job. In your job, there's two parts in a career, right? There are the things I have to do today, right? Things I have to do today. But in my career, there are more general goals, right? If all you do in your career is kind of like check off your task list, then okay, you get through the day, but you're not building your practice, you're not building your business, you're not building your career. You have to have more globally oriented goals. In Ruach Nias, it's the same thing. There's the things that I do day in and day out, which are beautiful, holy, and important. But what is the overarching vision for the Jew I want to become, for the person I want to become? And I think all too often in life, we're missing that part. Right? Think about, just be honest. Think about it for just a moment. If somebody were to ask you, what is your overarching spiritual vision about the Jew you want to be, and what's your plan to get there? I think most of us would be like, I'm finishing Shas in a year, right? You know, we would focus on what we're doing, but we let. So the Gemara is saying over here, it is beautiful to do holy things day in and day out. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. But you also have to be attentive to the overarching life spiritual vision. And if you don't have that intentionality, you could end up living life doing a lot of great things, but being profoundly underaccomplished. Kiddusha, Karbanos, right? Karbanos, Kadshim. If you want Kiddushan life, it requires one simple thing. Intentionality. Because intentionality creates planning. Planning creates a Seder. Seder ultimately allows me for the actualization of my goals. Don't spend life just doing good daily things. Create that comprehensive vision and have the courage ultimately to execute. Incredible. Says the Mishnah. Shechitas ovi kochavim nevelim etam masas. We'll say, so now we're switching gears a little bit. The Shechita of an ovi kochavim. Shechita of an akum, right, is, listen to this, is nevela. Now again, I'll say, this is very important, because what is nevela? What is nevela? A nevela is an animal that dies without shechita. Without shechita. Now again, I'll say, so essentially, now, a nevela, as it says right now, tamei masa, also conveys tumah. So what the Mishnah is saying is, not only is the shechita of an akum, right, not valid, but it's as if what? It's as if what? It's as if it didn't even occur. Like, in other words, it's as if a shechita didn't occur at all, and this animal just died on its own. So this white window, when an akum does shechita, that shechita is halachically not even recognized as an act of shechita, and therefore the animal is an avela, and ultimately, again, is mitame tumas masa. Now Rashi points out over here, afilu kilchasa, v'achilu, afilu roim, achirim roin osa. Even if other people oversee, right, even if, let's say, a yid is watching over that akum, still the shechita is not good. So the Gemara says, nevela in Israel no'alo. Now what's interesting is, the shechita of an akum is an avela, but yet it's not an Isra Hanah. In other words, I would have thought that when an Oved Kochavim shechts an animal, what should it be considered? Avodah Zarah. Right? Maybe he has in mind to do it for his Avodah Zarah. Right? The Gemara says, so, but yet we see that's not the case. It's an Avela, but it's not Asr Ba'anah. Because most remember, anything associated with Avodah Zarah, by definition, is Asr Ba'anah. It can't get benefit. So, Mantana, Amr Bechib Rabbi Abba, Amr Rabbi Ochanan, Lok Rabbi Eliezer. This does not refer to Rabbi Eliezer. Di Rabbi Eliezer, Amr, Stam Machshavas Obeid Kochavim, La Avodas Kochavim. So, what Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbi Eliezer says that this is not, because Rabbi Eliezer says the stam machshava of a kohavim, stam machshava of an idolater is for his idolatry. They both say, how jealous do we have to be about that statement? Right? How jealous? An Ovid kohavim, all he thinks about is his avodah zarah. Right? All he thinks about is avodah zarah. They both say, can you imagine being able to say that about the Ribbono Shel Olam? Right? We're learning this in Bilvavi. All I think about is Hashem. All I think about is Yiddishkeit. All I think about is Torah. All I think about is Am Yisrael. There's something to be learned. There's really something to be learned. Ultimately, again, well, you know, there's a beautiful vart that Yaakov Avinu. Wait, we really have to move on. When Yaakov Avinu meets up with Esav. So remember again, he says in Lavan Garti, right? He says to Esav, I've been living with Lavan. So Rashi HaKadosh quotes the Gemara that says in Lavan Garti, V'taryag Mitzos Shamati. So again, so Rashi says, I lived with Lavan, And then again, Tayag, he tells Esav, I kept Tayag, so that's just a play on words, right? Because Garti and Tayag are the same letters. I lived with Lavan, right? I kept the Tayag mitzvos, and I did not learn from his evil ways. So the after of, the Av Yisrael asks, he says, okay, like, if you're Esav, you're like, Shkayach, I don't care. Like, why do I care that she kept Tayag mitzvos? So the after of says something amazing. He says, Yaakov Avinu wasn't saying it. Ultimately, again, for Esav, he was saying it for himself, and actually, he was lamenting something. He says, "You know, Lavan Garti, and even when I lived with Lavan, Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti, I went ahead and I kept Tayag Mitzvahs. But you know what I lost out on? For Lo Lamarti Mi Masav Harav, I really should have learned. We translate it as, and I didn't learn from Lavan Baruch Hashem. So the Atarav says Yaakovin was lamenting this a little bit. He's like, I really should have learned from Lavan. Why? Lavan was such a ridiculously dedicated Rasha. Right? It wasn't the pshat that he woke up in the morning and said, you know what? Today, I am too tired to be a Rasha. Right? Today, I'm not in the mood to be a Rasha. You know, I don't believe in this. He was such a dedicated Rasha. Through and through. 7 days a week. 24 hours a day. He was so incredibly dedicated to this ideal. And Yaakov said, you know what? I wish I would have learned that level of dedication from him. I wish I would have absorbed, obviously not in the evil way, but I will say, but sometimes you see people in this world who are so ridiculously committed to something, and there's a beauty in that. So Beloza says, Lavan was dedicated to being a Rosh. Yaakov Avinu lamenting, I wish I had that level of dedication in my service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beloza says, and Oved Kochavim is so ridiculously dedicated to his Avodah Zarah. And Beloza, there's something to be gleaned, there's something to be learned, and there's something to be coveted about that level of dedication. Rabbi Ami, Amar Hachi Katan, is what it means to say, Shechitas Oved Kochavim Neveli, Demin La'avodas Kochavim. So Rabbi Avi says like this, that the shechita of an Oved Kochavim is an Avela, right? Ultimately, again, ha demin la'avodas kochavim. So we'll say, so what are we talking about? When is that? So we'll say there's another case. We're going to be talking about a min la'avodas kochavim. We're going to see that there's a distinction between what we call an akum, who's just, essentially, remember again, we use the word akum really as the Hebraic term almost for a Gentile, and any non-Jew. We're going to see there's another term called the min. A min is someone who is aduk ba'avodah zarah. He's mamish on fire, on fire about his idolatry. So Gemara says, let's analyze this. Good. Shechitas min avodas kochavim, right? Shechitas min avodas kochavim. So when a min does shechita, we assume that it's for idolatry. Pita pas kusi, his bread is treated like the bread of kusim. Yeno yayin nesek. Now, both say this is talking about a Jewish min, right? Unfortunately, Chamar al-Islam, a Jew who is totally into avodah zarah, totally attached to avodah zarah. So ultimately, again, he is treated like an mamish and ovid avodah zarah in every way. His wine is yayin nesach. Sfarav sifrei kosim. Even if he writes books of Torah, we do not treat them like Torah. We treat them as books of like sorcery. Peros of tvalim. His produce is considered to be tevel. The yesh umrim af banav mamzerim. Wow. And we'll say some say his children are treated like mamzerim as well. Because we'll say ultimately, again, Rashi says, Eino makbid al ishto mafkira. Since he's totally adak ba'avodah zarah, the assumption is he doesn't have a code of morality as well, and therefore he allows his wife to be promiscuous. Tanakama, ishto mafkir. Tanakama says, well, hold up there, right? No, I don't agree with that one. He might be an obed avodah zarah, but even by the obed avodah zarah, they still have the construct of marriage. So therefore, we'll say what we're being introduced to over here is really two different categories. And stam akum, when he goes ahead and he shechts, his shechita is an avela. Nevela, a min, when he shechts, his shechita is avodah zarah. And again, Rabbi say, therefore, his shechita will be also asr ba'ana. Good. Says the Gemara, Amar Mar, shechita so become nevela, v'necha shema minhu. Rabbi say, this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. So Mar said, the shechita of an Ovi Kochavim is a nevela. Aye, but 1 second. Maybe he's a min. Amar Nachman, Arav Aravua, ein minin ba'omos ovdei kochavim. No, there's no real minin amongst the Akum population. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? It's not true. We see that there are minin by Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Ema, listen to this. Ein rov Ovdei Kochavim minin. Rather, we'll say what it means is the majority of Ovdei Kochavim are not minin. We'll say, this is great. This is so funny. Right? Which is, the truth is, the majority of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they're not so committed. they're not so committed. Like a shtickle off the derech. Like there's like at risk of the avodah zarah, right? So in other words, they're kind of in the fold, out of the fold, not really. In other words, they identify. If you ask them, what are you? Oh, the avodah zarah. But they're not really committed to their avodah zarah. Therefore, again, they do not have the status of a min. This is wild, right? So the Ovdei Chacham of Chutz La'aretz, they're not really that committed. They're not really so theologically committed. Rather, again, it's so why do they worship? Why do they worship Avodah Zarah? It's what their fathers did. Minag avosinu biyadeinu, right? It's what was done. I will say, by the way, just a very quick look at Tosis. Nachrim shebechutz la'aretz, lav de'avodah zarah hein, hilchach, beretz Yisrael nami, ein adukin kol kach, shiu ma'aseim l'shem avodas kochavim. So I will say, so I just want to point out something very interesting. So remember, look what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that the akums, right? The akums of chutz la'aretz are not so committed to their avodah zarah. They do it because that's what's done. So therefore, Tosfos says the majority akum population ultimately in chutz la'aretz. Therefore, certainly the akum population in Eretz Yisrael is not that committed as well. So I will say, by the way, just to understand the beauty of this, for us, it's an inverse relationship, right? In other words, for the Akum, what sets the tone for the nation of Akums, is the Akum in Chutz La'aretz. So if the Akum in Chutz La'aretz are not so committed, then all the more so, ultimately, again, the Akum in Eretz Yisrael are not so committed. For Klal Yisrael, you know, also, again, our national heart beats, ultimately, in Eretz Yisrael. And I will say, you know, very soon, we are reaching the tipping point of where the majority of the Jewish people will be in Eretz Yisrael. So just understand what that means. In other words, the heartbeat of Am Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, again, for us, what happens in Eretz Yisrael ultimately, again, sends ripple effects across the rest of Jewry. For the Akum, what happens in Chutz La'aretz sends a ripple effect to the Akum in Eretz Yisrael. For us, what happens in Eretz Yisrael sends a ripple effect for the global Jewry. Incredible. So the Gemara goes back there. I'm Rabbi Yosef Aaron Yumi, I'm Rabbi Nachman, Ein Minim Ba'Umos of Dei Kochavim. There are no real minim by the Umos of the Kochavim. So the Gemara said, I will say, so this is really fascinating. The Gemara is, it's like a bombshell. The Gemara said, I just want to let you know, generally, when we use the word Akum, and we knew this already, we really use it to mean Gentile. We don't really mean it to describe someone who is steeped in idolatry. Why not? Because the overwhelming number of people who even identify with some type of idolatrous religion are not really involved. It's minag avosinu biyadeinu. It's kind of like they do what they do, but there's no real deep theological commitment. When we want to refer to someone who has a deep theological commitment to his avodah zarah, we will use the word min. So the Gemara incredible. Lamai, so what does it mean? What's the ramification of this? Ilemon l'shchita. If we say it's for shchita, hashta shchitas min di yisrael amret asira, dovik chomi bai. We'll say now again, if the shchita of a Jew who's a min is going to be asir, then certainly again the shchita of an Ovid kochavim shouldn't be good. El lemoridin. Rather, we'll say it's pretty intense. Rather, moridin we'll say means pushing someone into a pit so that they will die. Okay, so a bit of context. So the Gemara says, look at Rashi of the moridin, bebar da'aminin be'in ma'amidin, haminin moridin osan labar. So we'll say, listen to this. A Jewish min, you're allowed to push him into a pit. Now we'll say, it's very important to explain what this is. Historically, when the Gemara talks about a Jewish min, this is not just someone who kind of went off and doesn't believe. This is someone who became actively antagonistic and dangerous to the Jewish community. Almost had a quasi, or a status of a moser. Someone who literally posed a danger to the Jewish community. So the halacha is, a person like that has a din of a rodef. Right? The din of a rodef, the din of someone who's pursuing you to harm you or to kill you. What are you allowed to do? You're allowed to kill that person first. So I just want to be clear. It does not simply refer to someone who does not believe like us. What do you do with a Jew who doesn't believe like you? What do you do with them? You love them even more, right? Because hopefully, again, the more love you show, hopefully, again, one day somehow that ignites the fire in the neshama. That's not what we're talking about over here. This is a min. This is someone, again, who turned his back but also became actively antagonistic. So the Gemara says, Hashta di yisrael moridin, da'av de kochav mibai. If, again, you're going to go ahead and be morid, a Jew who's a min, so certainly an ovei kochav is going to be a min, certainly as well. Amar avoka bar chama, lekaba mehen karban. So Rabbi said, this is actually quite amazing. Rather, I will say, the distinction over here is accepting a carbon from them. Watch this quickly. The Sanya, Mikem v'lo kulchem. So Rabbah said, the pasuk says like this, that Rabbah Nisha Amar Talayim, Adam, ki akriv mikem karban la'Hashem. If a person from amongst you will offer up a karban to Hashem. So Rabbah said, mikem means you can accept karbanos from certain Jews, but not every Jew. Wild. Lohotzi es ha-mumar. To exclude the mumar, a Yisrael is a mumar, which again means someone who actively and intentionally sins, you cannot accept a carbon from such a person. Now, of course, if that person decides to become a Baal Tshuva, of course you can accept a carbon from them. But before they become a Baal Tshuva, you can't accept. Mikem, bachem, kalakti, v'lo ba'ovdei kochavim. So I will say, this is wild. This distinction only applies to Jews, does not apply to Gentiles. Rabbah says, isn't this wild? So a Gentile, even the biggest Oved Avodah Zarah, the biggest min, if he sends a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, we can accept it. But a Jew who is a min, or a Jew who is a mumar, as long as he remains steadfast in that state, we cannot accept his carbon. So the Gemara says, Mimai, how do you know this? How do you know? Dilma, Hakram, maybe this is what it means to say. Maybe by a Jew, you could only accept kabbalas from tzaddikim, but you can't accept kabbalas from rishayim. But you can't accept kabbalas at all. No, desanya ish. Pasuk says ish by kabbalas. Matal nomer ish. Ish, the rabbos of the kochavim shenojin and darman and davis kisal. Ish comes to us, ish is a generic term. And ish tells us that even an akum has the ability to go ahead and offer up a karban. Even an akum can. So Rabbah said this fantastic and incredible distinction. An akum could always offer up a karban. Whether he's an akum, whether he's a min, if he sends it, we accept it. Jews are held to a higher standard. We are always held to, the world holds us to a higher standard, and we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. How does that standard express itself? A regular Jew. Again, tzaddik or rasha, you can go ahead and offer up a karban. But if you're a min, if you're a mumar, then again, halacha l'maaseh, the Gemara says, we can't accept a karban from such an individual. I don't say, we'll stop over here for today. More about the shechita of Yaakov tomorrow. Shkayach, everyone. All right, everyone, have a great day. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
I don't know if I picks up one of these, but the team.